weekly show Against the Current. This is your go-to campus connection broadcasting from the heart of the Point Grey campus. Before we dive in, let's acknowledge that we are on the ancestral, unceded and traditional territory of the Musqueam people, and a fact that we honor and respect. An update for our regulars and newcomers alike. Our show has a new slot. Catch us every day, Wednesday at 10 a.m. for a fresh take on the most pressing topics. Well, the start of the year has certainly not been pleasant for us. With a mix of heavy snow and the transit strike, it's been a bit of a perfect storm for the city. In today's episode, we are going to delve deep into the details of the strike, understanding its impact on daily life and the broader implications for the city's future. So as we know, transit strikes are complex events deeply rooted in labor disputes, wage negotiations, working conditions, and the broader context of funding for public transportation. These strikes are typically the result of prolonged periods of unsuccessful negotiations between transit workers, unions, and the transit authorities or even the government bodies. So when we talk about economic and social impact of transit strike, it's not just numbers, trust me. It's about real tangible effects on the city's heartbeat. So take Vancouver, for instance, a city that leans heavily on public transportation, as we all know. A strike like this can throw and also threw our everyday life into chaos, disrupting our daily commutes for thousands of people. This led to increased traffic, lost productivity, and economic losses, particularly hitting local businesses hard. The strike has had a significant impact on the workforce, with more than 1 in 10 Metro Vancouver workers using transit to get to their jobs. A prolonged bus strike led to longer lineups to buy groceries, fewer baristas to make lattes, and a shortage of staff at medical facilities. Now let's take a look at the 2024 Vancouver Transit Strike. So this particular strike was spearheaded by Canadian Union of Public Employees, QPIL Local 4500. So QPIL 4500, which represents more than 180 transit supervisors for the Coast Mountain Bus Company, this company provides 96% of Metro Vancouver's bus services. So this strike started with an overtime ban and then escalated into a full-scale strike, significantly disrupting bus and C-bus services. The strike did not affect SkyTrain, West Coast Express, Handy Dart, and a handful of bus routes, as it was said. The current strike stemmed from failed negotiations over wage discrepancies, the union's demand for a 25% pay increase, which the Coast Mountain Bus Company found unreasonable, was the central point of contention. The strike's impact was immediate and widespread, affecting approximately 300,000 daily commuters and leading to a spike in the costs of alternative transportation services like Uber and Lyft. As we speak, the situation still remains tense. The union's engagement with the BC Labour Relations Board and the threat of expanding the strike to include the SkyTrain, the Canada Line, and the West Coast Express paint a picture of potentially escalating scenario. The possibility of a complete shutdown of all public transit services in the region looms large, especially with the union threatening to withdraw services for 72 hours starting from February 3rd if no agreement is reached. So this strike has ignited a significant debate on whether transit should be classified as an essential service. The initiation of a petition by a local commuter to declare transit an essential service highlights the community's concern and dependence on a reliable bus system. So now we'd like to turn the microphone over to you, our listeners, especially the students from UBC. So how has the transit strike affected your daily commute to UBC? Did you experience any longer travel times, and how did you adjust your schedule according to the transit strike?
So with the strike 2 weeks ago, when the buses were completely shut down, I couldn't really come to campus. I live too far to walk. I don't have access to a bike. The Uber prices were like insanely expensive. So I was very lucky that the classes I was in moved online. But for one of them, for example, it like, since the university doesn't make a cross-university decision to move online, I wasn't sure if it would be online until about 5 minutes before the class happened. And that just caused a lot of stress in the morning, not knowing if I was going to lose marks for not attending in person. So that was tough.
What do you say, what alternative modes of transportation did you use during the strike?
So I basically just didn't go anywhere during the strike. I would walk to the grocery store because that's accessible, but yeah, walking was my only alternative mode of transportation.
So did the strike had any impact on your academic life or on your personal life as such?
I wouldn't say that it ended up or that it has had any like long-term impacts. Like I said, in the moment, not knowing what was going to be online, what wasn't, that was quite stressful. But it hasn't had any lasting impact.
Alicia, can you describe how did the transit strike affect your commute to campus?
Yeah, I didn't commute to campus. I live like a good, I want to say 35, 40 minute bus ride away. So it wasn't reasonable for me to like walk to campus. So I just ended up staying at home and trying to do as much work as I could from home. And it was pretty great because most of my classes moved online. But yeah, there was definitely a lot of stress around like questions of which classes were going to be moved online and how I was going to respond morning of.
So how satisfied are you with the university's response on transit strike? And do you think the communication was clear to the students?
I think the general university one was pretty clear because they did send like notes that put stuff on social media and emails out. But I did find on a course by course basis, there wasn't as much clarity just because different classes responded at different times. Some classes I had notification like good 12 hours in advance. Others I had under 10 minutes. I think it would be great for the university to kind of create like a response time. That way, like we can know like at least a good like 5-6 hours in advance. Like also, and I know the university can't control this, but like having like waking up at 6 a.m. Yeah, like waking up at 6 a.m. to figure out if there was a strike was like really, really scary.
Yeah, I remember we were awake all night, 3 a.m., 4 a.m. checking our updates, whether the strike has happened or whether it's escalating or not.
Yeah, like I know the university can't control anything about that. But finding ways to kind of make a massive announcement would have been great. I mean, they have our numbers. They have our emails. It'd be great if we had a bit more of communication from the university directly rather than just kind of hoping that things were going to be okay when I woke up.
Yeah. Can you please describe how has transit strike affected you and your personal life and your academic life?
Okay, yeah. So the transit strike actually had some negative effects actually on me personally. I think for my family, my husband had to go to work, and that cost of using Uber basically ate up our feeding budgets for like next 2 weeks basically. So what would have spent on feeding was what we spent on Uber, and that was really that was not nice at all. I think UBC did well, even though we could have had some more clarity. For instance, the school could have taken a firm position to say that classes would not hold, rather than leaving it to just the instructors to decide. Because I feel like some of the instructors also did not get the information on time. And so there was a bit of confusion on what we're supposed to do with respect to classes. Information came in late, even though I already took the decision that even if I had to go to class, I won't be able to go because I couldn't afford to. And there was no way I was going to walk from where I live to school. But having some clear position from UBC, knowing that most of the students use the transit, would have been better than leaving it to the instance of the instructors to decide. I think that would have been better.
Okay, thank you so much, Idara, for that. So how would you say it has it had any effects on your life, like after the transit strike, or was it just somewhere or the other around the transit strike itself?
Okay, yeah, like I said, the transit strike ate into our personal family budget, and of course that affects quality of life too. But we are trying our best to keep up. There is also the slight fear, understated fear, hoping that the strike will not happen again, because we're also not sure of what that impact would be. and what how that would affect us going forward. Of course, I mean, the confusion did not help even get myself together to do some of my classwork. For some courses, you can take them online, but sometimes you just need to be in class. Yeah. And the strike definitely did not help us, you know, get to that. And so that affected the quality of learning for me. It was a bit distracting too as well, having to think about what how the next class would be, internet connectivity issues, aside from other things. So post-strike is still the understated fear of possibility of another strike, meaning I might have to relive that experience again. It's not something I'm looking forward to.
Okay. Thank you so much, Adara. So, hi, Nishtha. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. So, Nishtha, how would you say the transit strike affected your life, your academic life, or your commute to UBC?
I think it greatly affected my mobility in general, and obviously the different aspects of my life, because as someone who doesn't own a car in Vancouver, it's very difficult to commute when you don't have access to buses or other forms of public transport, because even other alternatives during the transit strike were extremely expensive. Uber was charging surge pricing, which is, as a student, not always the most affordable option. So yeah, for those for that particular day, it was really difficult to commute anywhere.
So, Nishtha, what are your thoughts on transit strike and how things unfolded between the union and the government?
I do understand that people have grievances with the transit strike and how it affected their day-to-day functioning, but I understand the other side also, where the bus supervisors and the transit supervisors are coming from. Sometimes strike action is inevitable, but I'm glad that the government, the BC government and the union, have entered negotiations. Hopefully this can be resolved as quickly as possible.
Okay, so can you tell us what are your opinions on how UBC has communicated the transit strike to the students?
I think within the constraints, UBC did quite well with communicating, given the fact that we didn't come to know about the strike happening till like 3 a.m. in the morning. I think UBC was quite responsive in that sense to tell us about what's happening first beforehand, and then immediately after the job action was announced. I think the rest of the communication percolates down to individual classes and how those professors communicated. Maybe there were some lags there, but I think on a university level, UBC clearly made it sort of as targeted and as clear as possible about what was going to happen if the transit strike happened.
Okay, so Nishtha, tell me about this. So are you worried about if the strike will happen again, or will it affect you?
Yeah, I'm definitely concerned what happens after Feb 3rd, which is the deadline for negotiating. And the fact that the SkyTrain is also said to be going on strike now is even more concerning, because that just limits your commute to like other parts of the city, or like for other reasons other than academic pursuits. So yeah, I mean, that uncertainty is definitely worrying, because nobody likes Zoom classes. Yeah,
especially if you're paying so much for a particular program or a course, you would not want to just sit back and just attend it online.
I mean, absolutely. And I think on a personal level for me, it really impacts how much I'm able to engage with the class. I know that it's also sort of constraint on the professor as well. So yeah, hopefully the transit strike does not happen again and we can continue in-person teaching, because the weather is finally getting better.
That's there. Okay, thank you so much, Nishtha, for that. We really appreciate having you. Okay, Mariama, so can you tell us, how did the transit strike affect your commute to UBC and your personal life?
Thank you very much for having me here. Actually, it affected me because I could not come to school when it happened. My classes were held online, fortunately for me, so I didn't miss out. But then I would have loved to come to campus to do certain things outside of my normal academic schedule. And then at a personal level, it affected me because I could not even go grocery shopping, where I usually go shopping, and where I lived. I need to, you know, use the bus to get there, and because of the TransLink strike, I could not do that. So I was even out of groceries, and I could not go to get them because of the strike. So personally, it affected my livelihood in Soweto. Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much, Mariama, for that. Oh, hi, Maha. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ankita.
Okay, so Maha, what do you want to describe? How did the transit strike affect your commute to UPC and your personal or academic life?
So it was a bit of a trouble for me, certainly because of the fact that I do not have a car here in Vancouver, and we are new to Vancouver as well. Dropping my son to school was an issue because he is young, and making him walk all the distance to the school was an issue that day. Moreover, the announcement of the strike being confirmed was done overnight, so you couldn't like really take a call a day before as to how you would go about it, whether you should request somebody else to drop him if they have a car, or you'll be able to manage it yourself. Anyway, we walked it down. He was quite cooperative, but I was dreading if it gets extended, how will we manage?
Yeah. So how would you say UBC's communication has been about the transit strike? Are you satisfied with it, or do you think that has affected your personal life as well?
I think the announcement overall from UBC came well within time. However, communication personally from some professors was not very timely. But I believe that in a situation of this nature where things are very fluid, everybody has to adjust. And I think most people did that. So, yeah, we overcame the situation.
Okay, so Maha, how would you say how the events unfolded during the transit strike between the government and the union? How would you say, what is your take on that?
I think whenever it comes to the issue of wage raises, there are always two sides to the issue. Of course, those demanding the wage raise are well within their rights to do so because they feel that they are not being paid their worth. But from what I understand from the media, the way the media has in fact put out details of how the revenues of the TransLink are really, panned out over the years, and how some of the revenue that they get is not enough to be able to accommodate the requests of wage hikes. You look at both the aspects together and you're not able to make up your mind as to who you should be siding with. Of course, those who deserve a pay hike want it. And they are well within their right to protest as well and strike. But being on the other side as a person who's using the public transit, it is
like dependent on public transit.
Yeah, exactly. We are completely dependent on public transit. Sometimes you feel that the negotiation should be done faster. Yeah.
So would you say that you're worried about things escalating or strike happening again?
Yes, certainly I'm concerned about that. And I think next month again, the date for the negotiations is within the first week. And if it doesn't materialize this time, the SkyTrains will also be affected. So not that in UBC we are using SkyTrains, but sometimes to get a bulk of your grocery, if you want to go far from UBC, you do use the SkyTrains, and therefore all of that will be impacted. So yes, I suppose people will be deciding on scheduling their grocery shopping, etc., dependent on the transit strike.
Okay, so do you want to say that you also have plan in mind if something?
I will walk it down.
Yeah,
I don't think there is any other option.
Yeah.
But yes. Getting grocery in bulk for, say, a week or so, which we usually do, will be a bit of a challenge because you can't walk with such heavy grocery bags.
Then you have to take the Uber, and the Uber prices are really high.
Exactly. In fact, I do have a grudge on the surge pricing that that the aggregators, the cab aggregators do. I think they should be sensitive that these are not times where they should try to maximize their revenue at the cost of people suffering and paying, double the amount of what they would generally.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Maha, for that.
Thank you.
So coming up next, we have Dr. Mark Thompson, a distinguished figure in the academic landscape here at Soweto School of Business at UBC. So Dr. Thompson brings a wealth of knowledge and expertise, particularly in the fields of labor law and collective bargaining. Dr. Thompson's experience in labor relations will provide us with a deeper understanding of the current situation, its implications, and possibly the pathways towards resolution. So stay tuned as we dive into an enlightening discussion with Dr. Thompson.
Hey Vancouver, for fans of Ocean Alley, Flip Turn, and Still Woozy, alt rockers Juice are bringing their signature blend of rock, pop, R&B, and hip-hop to the Biltmore Cabaret on February 3rd, with support from Hembry. Tickets are on sale now. Get yours at admitone.com. Fun Drive 2024 is right around the corner, and this February is the perfect time to say yes to CITR and all it has to offer. Visit donatetocitr.ca right now, make a donation, and then claim your prizes. For a $30 donation, you'll receive a CITR earplug case. $60 gets you a glow-in-the-dark yo-yo. A donation of $101.90 scores you specialized marble dice and a song dedication on Valentine's Day.
The next one's dedicated to Rachel from Ross.
A $200 donation will get you an engagement ring 32-ounce Nalgene water bottle. $500 and you'll be sporting a nifty Just Married sweatsuit. And for a grand donation of $1,000, you'll get to host your own show on CITR 101.9 FM.
Testing, testing. Is this thing on?
And remember, all prize tiers include their specific prizes, plus all the prizes from lesser tiers. That means for an $1,000 donation to CITR, you will receive an earplug case, a glow-in-the-dark yo-yo, marble dice, a Valentine's Day song dedication.
The next one's dedicated to Rachel from Ross.
A 32-ounce Nalgene water bottle. A fashionable Just Married sweatsuit. And of course, your own show on the station.
All right, here we go.
So what are you waiting for? Say yes and visit donatetocitr.ca today and help us reach our goal of $20,000.
TransCare BC works to enhance the coordination of trans health services across the province and offer expanded health services to support transgender communities. They are doing this by developing gender-affirming client-centered models of service, ensuring access to gender-affirming and supportive healthcare that is equitable and available, and supporting network development to make sure trans and gender-diverse individuals, their families, and healthcare providers have access to information, resources, and support. Check out phsa.ca to learn more about this program and lend your voice to help create an inclusive and supportive system for trans members of our community.
Okay, perfect, Mark. So starting from the basics, given the recent strike which led to a shutdown of bus and sea bus services, how do you assess the impact of such strikes on daily commuters and sectors like the food and beverage industry and other sectors?
Well, this this strike has an extraordinary impact on the general public. Relatively small union, 180 people, but they put a picket line at the bus service. And so thousands and thousands of commuters were affected. Now, experience shows us that people are fairly clever at coping with this, but it certainly at the outset, it was a big inconvenience. And it was only a two-day strike. The union was seeking to escalate the pressure, and the starting point was just a 48-hour strike at the beginning of the week, and that got the attention of the government, and so there are efforts now to settle the dispute without another stoppage.
Yes, Mark. So, as we know that QP 4500 played a central role in the strike, could you elaborate on specific demands or grievances of this union and how they align with the broader trends in labor disputes within the public transit sector?
Well, the this is a supervisors union, so it's quite small, and the rest of the system is represent the workers and the rest of the system are represented by other unions. The union says that it wants a parity for its members with other transit supervisors. And obviously the employer is resisting that. Now it's we don't know very we don't know what goes on in bargaining. And that's a good thing. If the parties are trying to negotiate in public, it usually leads to trouble. But so we don't know whether the demand of the union or the resistance to the demand of the union is because of the money involved or because it would cause other unions to demand the same treatment if the supervisors got a bigger increase than others. I mean, that's kind of a technical point, and we simply don't have the answer. Now, keep in mind that the transit system, including the buses, has not recovered from the loss of riders in the during the pandemic. And so they've gone to the provincial government asking for special grants so they can keep the system operating. And so they're especially accountable for the money that they spend. The union claims that the amount of money involved is quite trivial. Of course, unions pretty much always say that. And so I don't put a lot of stock in that, but that's what goes on in bargaining. And the government appointed the most effective mediator in the province, a man named Vince Reddy, to try to settle the dispute a few days ago, and he was unsuccessful. And now the government has appointed him as a special mediator, which gives him extra powers to recommend a settlement, and he's has until next week to do that, a fairly short time. So we'll have to see how that if he is successful in re recommending a settlement that both sides can accept.
Okay, thank you, Mark, for that. So you mentioned that provincial government appointed a special mediator for the dispute. So in your opinion, how does government intervention typically influence the dynamics of collective bargaining?
Well, this is, in a sense, the minimal level of intervention that is available to the government. The Labor Code provides a number of mechanisms for the government to deal with a stoppage short of imposing a settlement, which nobody really likes. And so that if the parties if what if the parties know the government's going to step in, then they're not inclined to bargain hard to reach agreement. Each side will think, well, the government will save our day, and that's a bad thing. So the government wants to keep the parties guessing, as it were, so that they try to bargain and reach an agreement that they control, rather than having the government impose something.
Okay, Mark. So as we all know that the strike occurred after mediated talks between QP 4500 and Coast Mountain Bus Company that ended without a resolution. So from a labor law perspective, What are the common factors that could lead to such breakdowns in negotiations?
Well, the union has shown that it can shut down the bus system. It is seeking permission from the Labor Relations Board to extend its picketing so that it shuts down the SkyTrain. Now, that's a very technical point. And the Labor Board is having a hearing starting on Monday to deal with that issue. And we don't know how that's going to turn out. At least I don't know. It's a kind of a technical point. The parties will be meeting with Mr. Reddy next week. And that will be in private. And we won't know much until Mr. Reddy either announces a settlement that they both have accepted, or if that isn't possible, he will issue a report recommending a settlement. And then it's up to them to whether they want to reject his proposal or not. That puts additional pressure on them. If the company is not able to persuade Mr. Reddy that it can't afford the demand that the union is making, then that puts the employer in a difficult situation. And conversely, if the union doesn't persuade Mr. Reddy that their comparison is equal, or that the jobs are equal, and therefore the pay should be equal, then that puts them in a difficult situation. And that's the purpose of doing all this, is with the parties where they feel they're not going to like it, but it's better than the alternative.
Yeah, Mark. So Mark, strike did not affect services like SkyTrain, Canada Line, HandyDart, and West Coast Express. So how are decisions made about which services to include or exclude in strike actions, and what legal considerations come into play?
Well, as I say, that's a very technical point. The theory of this in the law is that if an employer who has a strike gets assistance in dealing with the strike, serving its customers, whatever the case may be, that the second company or the second employer is then becomes a party to the dispute, and the union can picket them. And I frankly don't know the law well enough to predict what the Labor Board is going to do. Coast Mountain has done is to tell passengers that they can use the SkyTrain if that's feasible when the buses aren't running, which frankly doesn't strike me as much of a link between the two systems.
Yeah.
But that's why they have lawyers meeting on Monday at the Labor Board downtown Vancouver, and we'll see what the board decides.
Oh yeah, definitely. So in light of UBC's advisories during the strike encouraging remote work and alternative planning, so how do major institutions typically respond to such transit disruptions, and what are the legal obligations towards employees and students?
Well, for the university is having difficulty on this for sure, because students and staff rely upon the bus line. The 99 bus line is reputed to be the busiest one in the continent or something like that. It's always full when I see it. So they can arrange for students to who were, can't make it to the campus to take a class online, as they did during the pandemic. That's feasible. And the students may carpool or have other arrangements for getting to campus. Just as an aside, I wanted to go to a meeting on Wednesday at 1 o'clock on campus after the strike, was over. And I went out there and all of the parquets were full. So I never made it to the meeting, even though the bus line wasn't there. And of course, what the students, they weren't taking any chances. So the ones who had access to cars were driving and probably bringing their friends. So it's, and some of the staff I know have been working from home, did that during the pandemic. So presumably they were able to carry out their function. So it's a mix. Clearly the food services can't do it remotely. Some other functions and the laboratories have to be done in person, but it's kind of a mixed bag. And for 2 days, you know, we had 2 days for snow previous week and 2 days this week. We can do that. But if it's a longer strike, then it becomes much more difficult.
Yeah, Mark, I agree with the snow and with the strike. It was like a perfect storm, definitely. So, Mark, in your opinion, how does solidarity of different unions like Unifor's refusal to cross QPay 4500's picket lines affect the dynamics of a strike?
Picket lines are very important in British Columbia. And union members do not cross picket lines, period. That's been true at UBC in the past. If there's a strike on the campus, the buses don't come on the campus, for instance, because the bus drivers are not going to cross the picket line set up by UBC staff. The labor code recognizes that. That's a long-standing tradition in British Columbia. So that's why they have these mechanisms for settling disputes, knowing that the union members won't cross a picket line. And mostly those are successful, but when they're not, as happened this week, it's inconvenient for a lot of people.
Yeah, Mark. So that brings us to the end of the interview. Thank you so much, Mark, for joining
us. You're welcome. Okay.
MRG Live is happy to present Anomaly with his live band at the Wise Hall on Saturday, February 24th, with support from Blue Wednesday. Anomaly has toured his electro jazz project all over the world. But this February, the Montreal-based artist embarks on a full Canadian tour for the very first time. Come out to experience the innovative fusion of electronic beats, jazz harmonies, and funky grooves from the one and only Anomaly, live in concert with his band. Don't miss Anomaly at the Wise Hall in Vancouver on February 24th, 2024. Tickets are on sale now at admitone.com.
FunDrive 2024 is right around the corner, and this February is the perfect time to say yes to CITR and all it has to offer. Visit donatetocitr.ca right now, make a donation, and then claim your prizes. For a $30 donation, you'll receive a CITR earplug case. $60 gets you a glow-in-the-dark yo-yo. A donation of $101.90 scores you specialized marble dice and a song dedication on Valentine's Day.
The next one's dedicated to Rachel from Ross.
A $200 donation will get you an engagement ring 32-ounce Nalgene water bottle. $500 and you'll be sporting a nifty just married sweatsuit. And for a grand donation of $1,000, you'll get to host your own show on CITR 101.9 FM.
Testing, testing. Is this thing on?
And remember, all prize tiers include their specific prizes, plus all the prizes from lesser tiers. That means for an $1,000 donation to CITR, you will receive an earplug case, a glow-in-the-dark yo-yo, marble dice, a Valentine's Day song dedication,
the next one's dedicated to Rachel from Ross,
a 32-ounce Nalgene water bottle, a fashionable just-married sweatsuit, and of course, your own show on the station.
All right, here we go.
So what are you waiting for? Say yes and visit donate to CITR.ca today and help us reach our goal of $20,000.
We do it for the love of it. Here at CITR and Discorder, we give you our love. No strings attached. All you have to do is turn on your radio or open the streaming app and it's there, free of charge, whenever you want it. We don't ask you for a thing. Most of the time. But 1 week out of the year, we give you a chance to return that love. It's called Fun Drive, and it's happening now. We're not asking for much. A little goes a long way. This year, we're aiming to raise $20,000 to help improve our studios and replace our aging antenna and transmitter. You can give a little or a lot. And there's prizes. If you give a little, there's little prizes. If you give a lot, there's big prizes. You can even host your own show. And it's easy. Go to CITR.ca and click on the donate button at the top of the screen. Do it right now. And help spread the love.
So that's all for today on the episode of Against the Current. I'm your host, Ankita, and I can't wait to explore more pressing issues with you in the coming weeks. Until next time, stay informed and stay engaged and keep listening to Against the Current.
One at a time, push them aside. Doubts in your mind, douse in the fire, reignite old designs. A light in the mind, the start of a song. Just the first chorus on, but the hours you waste, there is sweetness to taste in other ways to meet the gray. Doesn't that just go without saying? Don't let
break your little wheel. When you can't blame it on all the cold clouds, but through the hate you gotta find love. Sweet Susie, I just wanted you to know.
Why life's so cruel. I want Half my songs are sneaky kisses. Half my life I've been in love with you. He got more experimental as he aged, less sentimental. Normally things don't work out this way.
emotional.